Chapter 18. The boy from District 1 dies before he can pull out the spear. My arrow drives deeply into the center of his neck. He falls to his knees and halves the brief remainder of his life by yanking out the arrow and drowning in his own blood. I'm reloaded, shifting my aim from side to side, while I shout at Rue, "Are there more? Are there more?" She has to say no several times before I hear it. Rue has rolled to her side, her body curved in and around the spear. I shove the boy away from her and pull out my knife, freeing her from the net. One look at the wound, and I know it's far beyond my capacity to heal. Beyond anyone's, probably. The spearhead is buried up to the shaft in her stomach. I crouch before her, staring helplessly at the embedded weapon. There's no point in comforting words, in telling her she'll be all right. She's no fool. Her hand reaches out, and I clutch it like a lifeline, as if it's me who's dying instead of Rue.
"You blew up the food?" she whispers.
"Every last bit," I say.
"You have to win," she says.
"I'm going to. Going to win for both of us now. I promise." I hear a cannon and look up. It must be for the boy from District 1.
"Don't go."
Rue tightens her grip on my hand. "Course not. Staying right here," I say. I move in closer to her, pulling her head onto my lap. I gently brush the dark, thick hair back behind her ear.
"Sing,"
she says. But I barely catch the word. "Sing," I think. "Sing what?" I do know a few songs. Believe it or not, there was once music in my house, too. Music I helped make. My father pulled me in with that remarkable voice. But I haven't sung much since he died, except when Prim is very sick. Then I sing her the same songs she liked as a baby. "Sing." My throat is tight with tears, hoarse from smoke and fatigue. But if this is Prim's, I mean Rue's, last request, I have to at least try. The song that comes to me is a simple lullaby, one we sing fretful, hungry babies to sleep with. It's old, very old, I think, made up long ago in the hills. What my music teacher calls a mountain air. But the words are easy and soothing, promising tomorrow will be more hopeful than this awful piece of time we call today. I give a small cough, swallow hard, and begin. "Deep in the meadow, under the willow, a bed of grass, a soft green pillow. Lay down your head and close your sleepy eyes, and when again they open, the sun will rise. Here it's safe, here it's warm, here the daisies guard you from every harm. Here your dreams are sweet, and tomorrow brings them true. Here is the place where I love you." Rue's eyes have fluttered shut. Her chest moves, but only slightly. My throat releases the tears, and they slide down my cheeks. But I have to finish the song for her. "Deep in the meadow, hidden far away, a cloak of leaves, a moonbeam ray. Forget your woes and let your troubles lay, and when again it's morning, they'll wash away. Here it's safe, here it's warm, here the daisies guard you from every harm." The final lines are barely audible. "Here your dreams are sweet, and tomorrow brings them true. Here is the place where I love you." Everything's still and quiet. Then, almost eerily, the mockingjays take up my song. For a moment, I sit there, watching my tears drip down on her face. Rue's cannon fires. I lean forward, and press my lips against her temple. Slowly, as if not to wake her, I lay her head back on the ground and release her hand. They'll want me to clear out now, so they can collect the bodies. And there's nothing to stay for. I roll the boy from District 1 onto his face and take his pack, retrieve the arrow that ended his life. I cut Rue's pack from her back as well, knowing she'd want me to have it, but leave the spear in her stomach. Weapons in bodies will be transported to the hovercraft. I've no use for a spear, so the sooner it's gone from the arena, the better. I can't stop looking at Rue, smaller than ever, a baby animal curled up in a nest of netting. I can't bring myself to leave her like this, past harm, but seeming utterly defenseless, to hate the boy from District 1, who also appears so vulnerable in death, seems inadequate. It's the capital I hate, for doing this to all of us. Gale's voice is in my head, his ravings against the capital, no longer pointless, no longer to be ignored. Rue's death has forced me to confront my own fury against the cruelty, the injustice they inflict upon us. But here, even more strongly than at home, I feel my impotence. There's no way to take revenge on the capital. Is there? Then I remember Peter's words on the roof. Only I keep wishing I could think of a way to show the capital they don't own me, that I'm more than just a piece in their games. And for the first time, I understand what he means. I want to do something, right here, right now, to shame them, to make them accountable, to show the capital that whatever they do or force us to do, there is a part of every tribute they can't own, that Rue was more than a piece in their games. And so am I. A few steps into the woods grows a bank of wildflowers. Perhaps they are really weeds of some sort, but they have blossoms in beautiful shades of violet and yellow and white. I gather up an armful and come back to Rue's side. Slowly, one stem at a time, I decorate her body in the flowers, covering the ugly wound, wreathing her face, weaving her hair with bright colors. They'll have to show it, or even if they choose to turn the cameras elsewhere at this moment, they'll have to bring them back when they collect the bodies, and everyone will see her then, and know I did it. I step back and take a last look at Rue. She could really be asleep in that meadow after all. "Bye, Rue," I whisper. I press the three middle fingers of my left hand against my lips and hold them out in her direction. Then I walk away without looking back. The birds fall silent. Somewhere a mockingjay gives the warning whistle that precedes the hovercraft. I don't know how it knows. It must hear things that humans can't. I pause, my eyes focused on what's ahead, not what's happening behind me. It doesn't take long. Then the general bird song begins again, and I know she's gone. Another mockingjay, a young one by the look of it, lands on a branch before me and bursts out Rue's melody. My song, the hovercraft, were too unfamiliar for this novice to pick up, but it has mastered her handful of notes, the ones that mean she's safe. Good and safe, I say as I pass under its branch. We don't have to worry about her now. Good and safe. I've no idea where to go. The brief sense of home I had that one night with Rue has vanished. My feet wander this way and that until sunset. I'm not afraid, not even watchful, which makes me an easy target, except I'd kill anyone I met on sight. Without emotion or the slightest tremor in my hands, my hatred of the capital has not lessened my hatred of my competitors in the least, especially the careers. They, at least, can be made to pay for Rue's death. No one materializes, though. There aren't many of us left, and it's a big arena. Soon they'll be pulling out some other device to force us together. but there's been enough gore today. Perhaps we'll even get to sleep. I'm about to haul my packs into a tree to make camp when a silver parachute floats down and lands in front of me, a gift from a sponsor. But why now? I've been in fairly good shape with supplies. Maybe Hamish has noticed my despondency and is trying to cheer me up a bit. Or could it be something to help my ear? I open the parachute and find a small loaf of bread. It's not the fine white capital stuff. It's made of dark ration grain and shaped in a crescent, sprinkled with seeds. I flash back to Peter's lesson on the various district breads in the training center. This bread came from District 11. I cautiously lift the still warm loaf. What must it have cost the people of District 11 who can't even feed themselves? How many would have had to do without to scrape up a coin to put in the collection for this one loaf? It had been meant for Rue, surely, but instead of pulling the gift when she died, they authorized Hamish to give it to me. As a thank you? Or because, like me, they don't like to let debts go unpaid? For whatever reason, this is a first, a district gift to a tribute who's not your own. I lift my face and step into the last falling rays of sunlight. My thanks to the people of District 11, I say. I want them to know where it came from, that the full value of their gift has been recognized. I climb dangerously high into a tree, not for safety, but to get as far away from today as I can. My sleeping bag is rolled neatly in Rue's pack. Tomorrow I'll sort through the supplies. Tomorrow I'll make a new plan. But tonight all I can do is strap myself in and take tiny bites of the bread. It's good. It tastes of home. Soon the seals in the sky, the anthem plays in my right ear. I see the boy from District 1, Rue. That's all for tonight. 6 of us left, I think. Only 6. With the bread still locked in my hands, I fall asleep at once. Sometimes, when things are particularly bad, my brain will give me a happy dream, a visit with my father in the woods, an hour of sunlight and cake with Prim. Tonight it sends me Rue, still decked in her flowers, perched in a high sea of trees, trying to teach me to talk to the mockingjays. I see no sign of her wounds, no blood, just a bright, laughing girl. She sings songs I've never heard in a clear, melodic voice, on and on, through the night. There's a drowsy in-between period when I can hear the last few strains of her music, although she's lost in the leaves. When I fully awaken, I'm momentarily comforted. I try to hold on to the peaceful feeling of the dream, but it quickly slips away, leaving me sadder and lonelier than ever. Heaviness infuses my whole body, as if there's liquid lead in my veins. I've lost the will to do the simplest tasks, to do anything but lie here, staring unblinkingly through the canopy of leaves. For several hours, I remain motionless. As usual, it's the thought of Prim's anxious face as she watches me on the screens back home that breaks me from my lethargy. I give myself a series of simple commands to follow, like, now you have to sit up, Katniss. Now you have to drink water, Katniss. I act on the orders with slow, robotic motions. Now you have to sort the packs, Katniss. Rue's pack holds my sleeping bag, her nearly empty water skin, a handful of nuts and roots, a bit of rabbit, her extra socks, and her slingshot. The boy from District 1 has several knives, 2 spare spearheads, a flashlight, a small leather pouch, a first aid kit, a full bottle of water, and a pack of dried fruit. A pack of dried fruit. Out of all he might have chosen from. To me, this is a sign of extreme arrogance. Why bother to carry food when you have such a bounty back at camp? When you will kill your enemy so quickly, you'll be home before you're hungry? I can only hope the other careers traveled so lightly when it came to food, and now find themselves with nothing. Speaking of which, my own supply is running low. I finish off the loaf from District 11 and the last of the rabbit. How quickly the food disappears. All I have left are Rue's roots and nuts, the boy's dried fruit, and one strip of beef. Now you have to hunt, Katniss, I tell myself. I obediently consolidate the supplies I want into my pack. After I climb down the tree, I conceal the boy's knives and spearheads in a pile of rocks so that no one else can use them. I've lost my bearings, what with all the wandering around I did yesterday evening, but I try and head back in the general direction of the stream. I know I'm on course when I come across Rue's third unlit fire. Shortly thereafter, I discover a flock of gruselings perched in the trees and take out three before they know what hit them. I return to Rue's signal fire and start it up, not caring about the excessive smoke. Where are you, Cato? I think as I roast the birds and Rue's roots. I'm waiting right here. Who knows where the careers are now, either too far to reach me or too sure this is a trick, or, is it possible, too scared of me? They know I have the bow and arrows, of course. Cato saw me take them from Glimmer's body. But have they put two and two together yet, figured out I blew up the supplies and killed their fellow career? Possibly they think Thresh did this. Wouldn't he be more likely to revenge Rue's death than I would, being from the same district? Not that he ever took any interest in her. And what about Foxface? Did she hang around to watch me blow up the supplies? No. When I caught her laughing in the ashes the next morning, it was as if someone had given her a lovely surprise. I doubt they think PETA has lit this signal fire. Cato's sure he's as good as dead. I find myself wishing I could tell PETA about the flowers I put on Rue, that I now understand what he was trying to say on the roof. Perhaps if he wins the games, he'll see me on Victor's Night, when they replay the highlights of the games on a screen over the stage where we did our interviews. The winner sits in a place of honor on the platform, surrounded by their support crew. But I told Rue I'd be there, for both of us. And somehow, that seems even more important than the vow I gave Prim. I really think I stand a chance of doing it now. Winning. It's not just having the arrows and outsmarting the careers a few times, although those things help. Something happened when I was holding Rue's hand, watching the life drain out of her. Now I am determined to revenge her, to make her loss unforgettable. And I can only do that by winning and thereby making myself unforgettable. I overcook the birds, hoping someone will show up to shoot, but no one does. Maybe the other tributes are out there beating one another senseless, which would be fine. Ever since the bloodbath, I've been featured on screens more than I care. Eventually, I wrap up my food and go back to the stream to replenish my water and gather some. But the heaviness from the morning drapes back over me, and even though it's only early evening, I climb a tree and settle in for the night. My brain begins to replay the events from yesterday. I keep seeing Rue speared, my arrow piercing the boy's neck. I don't know why I should even care about the boy. Then I realize he was my first kill. Along with other statistics they report to help people place their bets, every tribute has a list of kills. I guess technically I'd get credited for Glimmer and the girl from District 4, too, for dumping that nest on them. But the boy from District 1 was the first person I knew would die because of my actions. Numerous animals have lost their lives at my hands, but only one human. I hear Gale saying, "How different can it be, really?" Amazingly similar in the execution. A bow pulled, an arrow shot. Entirely different in the aftermath. I killed a boy whose name I don't even know. Somewhere his family is weeping for him,
His friends call for my blood. Maybe he had a girlfriend who really believed he would come back. But then I think of Rue's still body, and I'm able to banish the boy from my mind. At least for now. It's been an uneventful day, according to the sky. No deaths. I wonder how long we'll get until the next catastrophe drives us back together. If it's going to be tonight, I want to get some sleep first. I cover my good ear to block out the strains of the anthem. But then I hear the trumpets and sit straight up in anticipation. For the most part, the only communication the tributes get from outside the arena is the nightly death toll, but occasionally there will be trumpets followed by an announcement. Usually, this will be a call to a feast. When food is scarce, the game makers will invite the players to a banquet, somewhere known to all, like the cornucopia, as an inducement to gather and fight. Sometimes there is a feast, and sometimes there's nothing but a loaf of stale bread for the tributes to compete for. I wouldn't go in for the food, but this could be an ideal time to take out a few competitors. Claudius Temple Smith's voice booms down from overhead, congratulating the six of us who remain. But he's not inviting us to a feast. He's saying something very confusing. There's been a rule change in the games. A rule change? That in itself is mind-bending, since we don't really have any rules to speak of, except don't step off your circle for 60 seconds and the unspoken rule about not eating one another. Under the new rule, both tributes from the same district will be declared winners if they are the last two alive. Claudius pauses, as if he knows we're not getting it, and repeats the change again. The news sinks in. Two tributes can win this year. If they're from the same district, both can live. Both of us can live. Before I can stop myself, I call out PETA's name.